Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. They post episodes on Monday and Thursday mornings, bright and early. The latest one discusses players like Lou Williams violating bubble rules and what the ramifications could be. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective now, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcast. The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always considers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, Lou Will goes to Magic City. Also, NBA owners looking kind of broke. But first... All right, so... Major League Baseball is trying to do their comeback to play, and they have come back to play. They're out there, and they're trying to do this without a bubble. I understand it's a little bit more difficult for them to make it work without a bubble than, say, the NBA. Like, I think it's real easy for us to look at all the other sports and then look at the NBA and then what our soccer leagues, the NWSL and the MLS, and to be like, well, why don't you just go to a bubble? I get it. It's a little bit trickier for them for a lot of facilities reasons. They could have done a lot in, say, Arizona, for example, because they got a lot of parks that are right by each other. I don't know exactly what the negotiations were between the two sides in order to where they decided they were going to do this with airplanes, they were going to do this with home stadiums, everything else. All right, got it. So, whole bunch of the Miami Marlins caught it. Whole bunch of them got the COVID. The exact number almost doesn't matter really at this point. Last time I saw it, the number was something like 14. Apparently, they think they might have caught it in Atlanta. And then they wound up going to play in Philadelphia. And then they were set to go to Baltimore to play against the Orioles. And so the games against the Orioles were canceled for Monday. Also, the games in Philadelphia, it was Yankees and Phillies. Those were canceled. Because, I mean, really, who's trying to go into the visiting clubhouse given those circumstances? So we wound up with that. And so Major League Baseball has its first legitimate outbreak of the COVID situation. And what was stunning as all the reports came down on Monday morning was they got a 113-page operations manual for dealing with COVID-19 for Major League Baseball. They ain't got a single word on what to do in the event of an outbreak. If one team had an outbreak, they have nothing in the whole thing about what to do if there's an outbreak. What? I'm going to try to be fair to Major League Baseball on this one, because it is very, very difficult for me to believe that they didn't have a single person, not one person in that operation who would say to himself or herself, hey, guys, what are we going to do about it if we have an outbreak? Like, somebody had to say that in the room, right? Like, it's hard for me to think that not one person said that in the room. I guess the conclusion that I have to draw from the fact that they didn't have a plan for an outbreak was they must have just decided that if we got an outbreak, ain't nothing we can do. That's it. Because otherwise, this is moronic, right? Otherwise, this is the dumbest thing in the world, that you had the time to plan, that you worked all this stuff out. And the one question that nobody asked themselves was, hey, what about an outbreak? Like, an outbreak was so reasonable to expect or assume could possibly happen given the circumstances that they are under. They didn't have a plan for an outbreak. So now they got this outbreak. We don't know when exactly it is that the Marlins are going to be able to play baseball again. They got a list of dudes they can, like, reach down to pull up to try to come play for them. But it's 9 people on the field at one time. They got more than 9 dudes, I think, that wound up catching it.
I saw someone, baseball writer, send out a tweet yesterday saying, the Marlins are looking for quality MLB players.
Yeah.
It's like a game of the replacements.
Yes, exactly. Oh, by the way, when did the Marlins start looking for quality MLB players, by the way? That's a whole change for them.
Yeah, it's news to me, right?
They had to change their ad on Craigslist that they used to have, which is, want to play baseball? Oh, this is bananas to me, and even more bananas. This is not bananas. I have to be fair to Rob Manfred on this. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball. I want to be fair to him on this, because he was been asked if this was a disaster scenario, and he says no, that it is not a disaster scenario. Now, I understand that a lot of us are out here thinking this is absolutely a disaster scenario. Why don't you just admit it, Rob Manfred? You can't admit it if you're Rob Manfred, because they're probably going to have the same disaster happen somewhere else with some other team. Right? Like, he can't cop to the idea that this is worst case scenario, because what happens if worst case scenario keeps popping up? And it can be worse, because it could be more people than they actually have. It could be multiple, like, players on both teams that wound up playing in a series. There's actually a chance that this could wind up being worse. And that's the part that has to scare Major League Baseball. But it's also the reason why they're like, yo, we ain't about to stop, though. Like, if we can go play these other games, then we're going to go play these other games. I've seen people raise the perfectly reasonable question about what is this going to do to the standings? What is this going to do, like, ultimately in the end, if you got a team that has played a lot fewer games than the rest of the teams are, what are you going to do? And I know what baseball's answer to that is. We'll figure it out. And you know why I know that baseball's answer to that is? We'll figure it out. Baseball's answer to that is we'll figure it out, because they not playing these games right now because they give a damn about crowning a champion. They playing these games right now because they got to get that money, right? They have to get games to put on television so that they can cash those checks. I'm not judging them for this. I understand what the stakes and ramifications are of not playing baseball. I get it. But you got to have something more than this. Something at all. And at the time of this recording, Gabe, we're like 24 hours out from finding out about this outbreak. Well, in fact, more than that, because it was like Sunday night, I feel like that the word started getting out, we had this outbreak. Have you heard anything yet about a plan? Y'all needed to have one in 24 hours. Like, you needed to have something to tell the players. You needed to have something to tell the fans. You needed something, because right now, everybody's looking at this and saying, whoop, looks like y'all are going to have to shut the whole league down. You see your man Fauci, he seems very worried about what has happened with Major League Baseball.
What's so markedly different about it, too, is that there's actually games going on. You know, the other leagues that have started up, or like, say, like European soccer, or whatever, they are basically finishing their seasons now. They had outbreaks, too. But when they had outbreaks, it was in that kind of like pre-game phase, training and practicing. So it wasn't like a, oh, well, we've got to cancel this whole slate of games because there's an outbreak.
Right. And so with MLS, they had two teams that wound up with outbreaks, right? And they tossed them out the bubble.
Yeah, prior to games.
They were doing like a tournament, right? Like, I don't feel like they had a slate of games that they had to deal with that operated in the same way. Like, we could reconfigure the way the tournament goes. But baseball, not really in the easy position to go ahead and do that. Here's the other thing that we learned that I did not realize, which was whether or not to cancel games, have games, all of that stuff, per the agreement that they set up to get ready for this, entirely under the discretion of the commissioner of baseball. Manfred is the guy that decides if these games are going to happen, if these games are going to be canceled, all of these things. To which my question was, so let's say that they had tried to play those games in Philadelphia. Nah, we ain't going, right? We're not setting foot in that visitor's clubhouse. We're not setting foot in that visitor's dugout. We're not going to do it. What the hell would Manfred do, right? Manfred really going to come down and drop the hammer on them under those circumstances? The thing is, he kind of might have to if that were to happen. And I say that just because they're getting ready for a real labor fight coming up in baseball. Like, that's the other thing that's surrounding all of this, is that a labor fight is on the way. And so when you're on the way of the labor fight, normally each side is like digging their heels in under these circumstances because they feel like it's just got to happen, right? Like, they can't show any weakness in advance of what's going to happen next. But they just going to keep playing baseball in these other places. I can't blame them for continuing to play baseball in these other places. They got to get this bread. And so if nobody's sick in these other places, ain't no reason for them to stop. The optics are bad, right? There's a reason to, I don't think that's enough of a reason to stop. I put it like that.
What do you think about what some of the Marlins players were saying about playing through it, our mentality by any means necessary?
Yeah, decisions should not have been left in their hands. That's the bottom line. The players should not have been left to make that decision. Manfred should have been the one to make the call and say, nope, this is not going to happen. That should have been on him. Players are going to play through whatever. I'm doing some research and reporting on another story right now that ties into a very similar thing. in that regard, which is one of the biggest problems that they're having in the face of COVID is all the things that we're telling guys to do now in the name of everybody's safety is stuff that they're told not to do for the rest, for the entirety of their careers and existences as players, right? So I'm a little sick. Well, you used to play through that. You know, I'm a little sore. Well, you used to play through that. Like, these are all things that people play through. I imagine the guys who contracted it and were asymptomatic, they're like, okay, cool, I can still play, right? Like, if you could have found a way for them to still play, they would have been out there to still play. So apparently they had a group text where they decided to play the game on Sunday, and that is when some more guys got sick. I don't quite understand how long it takes you to test positive, like after you get it or whatever. So I don't know if playing Sunday was the thing that did some of those guys in necessarily. You know, I don't know how that all goes. But I do think that if your team had an outbreak, I guess, I feel like a lot of baseball's plan, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, Gabe, but I feel like a lot of their plan is hinging on the idea that only one team at a time touches the ball, right? So their idea is that this is not necessarily going to spread to the players on the other team because you're not passing the ball to them.
I think that's a fair characterization of what they might have been guessing.
Yeah.
Baseball, unlike pretty much any other sport, there's very little physical contact between one team and the next team. So it would suffice to say that, well, there's going to be less spread because the players aren't actually interacting with each other on that level. Although I did see Rizzo for the Cubs giving guy on the other team a little bit of hand sanitizer on base, just kind of like, hey, you might want to put some hand sanitizer on next to each, because we're standing next to each other. I thought that was a little silly.
Yeah, the hand sanitizer thing ain't going to do nothing unless he touches you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's why I thought it almost trivialized it. This is a big joke to you, that type of thing.
Well, also, I don't know if it's a big joke to him as much as he just don't know nothing. You know, like I wonder how much of that is the issue, that he just doesn't know anything. Like, he knows very little about how this stuff is going. And that is something I would actually love to know more about, which is, how educated are the players on this? Look, let me tell you something that you can bet the house on. There are at least a couple of dudes on every team that think this is a hoax. Like, if you just look at kind of see like the general population and how many people believe that this whole thing is a hoax, and we're still getting stories. Did you see that that op-ed that dude wrote? The gay Republican in Dallas who wrote this op-ed about how he thought it was a hoax. And then he had, like, he threw a party and everybody caught it, basically.
Like Herman Cain with that rally in Oklahoma City.
Hold on. We have to refer to him by his full title. Morehouse's own Herman Cain.
But
you can call him Slurry Cain. Say they go, let him go ask Slurry Cain about COVID. He'd be like, COVID strong enough to start an engine, man. That's what he'll be. For those who don't quite understand this, I am an alumnus of Clark Atlanta University. Our chief rival across the street is Morehouse College, where Herman Cain not only graduated, but also a former member of the board. And see, the thing is, them dudes from Morehouse, they be wanting to ignore that. They want to come talk to you about Martin Luther King and Samuel L. Jackson and all of those, you know, those alums, those the cats, that Spike Lee, who took all his mass media classes at Clark. Anyway, they want to talk about all that. They don't want to talk about Herman Cain. Herman would have made all that money. Herm been on all them boards. Herm at one point was atop the polls to run for president. And I just don't really understand how it is that your institution had a dude that was running for president and was way up at the top. And y'all don't want to claim him? Come on, man. Y'all need to send that man some get well cards. He done a lot for your little institution to try to make y'all better, right? At least that's the way that he sees it. And y'all let him on the board. Herman Cain. Morehouse is old, Herman Cain. But you can call him Slurry Cain. Anyway, yes, that does seem to happen. Herm, you see this though, but like, no joke, Herm been in hospital for a month.
Yeah, so there's serious ramifications for anybody who's acting like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, and but they're like, you know, Joe West, the umpire, he apparently thinks that it's a hoax. Look, here's the thing about saying that this is a hoax. That has become a politicized issue, but that's not my fault. You know what I mean? You ain't gonna blame me for, if you think this is a hoax, you're a moron. You either, like, there's only two ways to look at it. I don't care what your political beliefs happen to be. You are either a moron or you are actively operating in bad faith. Like, those are the only two conclusions I can draw based on everything. Because let me tell you where I don't think it's no whole lot of people talking about it's a hoax. New York City. Because what I do think happens in other cities and in other places is that what, okay, I'll put it this way. Here's what it is about New York. Because it's so concentrated, it's so dense population-wise, you couldn't act like you didn't hear the sirens. You know, you couldn't act like you weren't seeing the toll that it was taking on the city. That just wasn't an option. I do feel like in other places where if all you got, you know, you live in your subdivision and you got some space between the houses and all of this stuff, you're not hearing that all through the night. You're not seeing an ambulance every time you go outside. Like even now, like things have gotten better in New York, but even now, man, I'm going, like if I go take a walk outside, it's probably a 1 in 3, 1 in 4 chance I'm going to see an ambulance go down the street. And look, the ambulance is not necessarily for COVID, right? There's all kinds of other things that are taking, you know, taking people out. That happens, or making people sick. Those things happen. But you couldn't live here and think that this wasn't real. Within Major League Baseball, and since this is a politicized issue, it is fair to take a look at the political inclinations of baseball players. They represent heavily in the this is a hoax demographic. Like, think about this. I think I counted it today. 12 baseball players opted out from playing due to COVID. 12 baseball players opted out. 5 New England Patriots have opted out, right? These are dudes I know, like dudes whose names I know, rather. Like Dante Hightower's opted out. Brandon Bolton has opted out. A couple other guys, like 5. 5 out of 53 decided that they're not going to do that. We're going to hear this from more people. I was talking to a colleague this morning who raised a great point. Von Miller, there's no chance he plays, right? To me, if you're a football player with an underlying condition, making that money don't matter if you die, man. Like, and I know that people need that bread, but getting that bread doesn't matter if you die. Getting that bread doesn't matter if you can't get no bread after this because your lung capacity has been permanently affected. None of those things matter under those circumstances, like when that happens. And so with baseball, they're in this, and I think they do have a population demographic that's more likely to think that this isn't really a big deal. I want to see how this goes for football players because I believe it's up until August 1 is when they have to opt out, which is, what, Saturday? Like, I think they've got until August 1 to be like, nah, I don't think that we're going to do this. My guess is we're going to see some pretty big names decide that they're not going to do this. And the big reason is children. Like, Hightower said that he was opting out because his wife was pregnant. As long as either of those sports is not bubbling people, you're going to have cases. And what you don't know is who's going to wind up being the super spreader. Right, you don't know who the guy is that's going to have this and give it to everybody else. There's no way to like accurately forecast this. They are going to try their hardest to make this work. I just can't see how it's possible to have a baseball season that finishes or a football season that finishes. And no, I'm going to say this right now. Everybody, whenever this has come up with, like I did First Take yesterday, and this came up there and it came up some other places that I've seen it when people have asked the question, when baseball had their situation, they're like, well, what does this mean for the NFL? The NFL to me is a secondary concern. Even if you want to talk about football, they're not the ones to worry about. It's the college players that are the ones to worry about, because at least them boys in the NFL got a union. At least they got a bunch of people they can get together with and they can organize and they can decide what they're going to do as a group. These college players, I've been making some calls on this, right? These college players are in worse situations than you guys realize, man. These dudes have absolutely no power whatsoever in this when they're showing up for these teams. Let me ask you, everybody, a question. What's the protocol for testing in college football? There is none. Now, let's say that there's a protocol. What if there's a protocol and the protocol is being violated? What can the players do? Go to their union rep?
Go to the student activities office?
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, who are they supposed to call? Nobody. They don't have anybody that they can call under those circumstances. Like, you worried about these dudes from the NFL. Like, I don't think those dudes should get out there and play. A lot of them, I understand why they might, right? Because they're going to get these bread. These college boys ain't getting no bread, you know? So I get why the NFL guys might go out there, and I don't want to be all some, you grown, you make your own decisions, but the truth is they are grown, and they do make their own decisions. That is different than what's going on with college. You can be like, well, they don't have to go.
Okay.
Gotcha. It's not fair, right? That's the one you need to worry about. But that's where we are when we look at all this stuff. You know what, Gabe? Play the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
this is way worse than anybody realizes because these guys don't have power. Remember when we found out about all those players at Clemson that tested positive? Have you heard anything from Clemson since?
Nothing.
Like, remember when you had those schools that were like, yeah, all our guys came in and none of them tested positive? What do you think about that? How plausible is that? Like, we got no way of getting into that. You see what I'm saying? Like, people are not digging into this. The benefit of the doubt is being afforded in a way that I question, that I don't know. So, yeah, like, the NFL guys, hey, man, if you guys decide to play, I wish you the best. I cross your fingers. I don't think you're going to be able to get it done. But you guys are walking in very well, you know, as well informed as one could expect. And then you're going to decide what to do. And baseball, they kind of got themselves in the same situation. But there are far more vulnerable people out here that are playing under these circumstances. And they're the ones to worry about. It's the college athletes that everybody needs to be out here thinking about. Every reporter that covers a college team needs to be out there asking hard questions about what the protocols are. Like, I haven't been reading a whole lot of stories about that from media. I haven't heard the people getting to the bottom of that. You know, like, look, man, what they're trying to do is, if you're not going to bubble, what they're doing is borderline impossible. As simple as that. If you're not going to bubble. The NBA going to make this work because they bubble. One way or another. These others, whew. I say good luck, but I mean, I don't want to seem trivial. I don't want to seem trite, but I'm just like, I don't see how baseball's going to finish the season. I mean, I sure hope they do, man. That affects everybody's bread if they can't finish these seasons, right? I work at a place that broadcasts baseball games. Trust me, I would like for them to finish the season. I just don't see how they can. All right, guys, I'd like to tell you a story. It was October 31st, 1998. Halloween, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, and me and the homies decided that we were going to go to Six Flags for Halloween. That's what we were going to do. We were going to go to Six Flags. But somehow, I don't know who knew, I don't know who said, because it's 1998, it wasn't like we had social media or anything like that. Somehow the word got around that, I don't remember if they would say it was people getting shot or people getting jumped, whatever it is, but physical harm was being delivered upon people at Six Flags who were wearing all black. As we stood there wearing all black with our scream masks on. And we were like, nah, we probably shouldn't go there. And then somebody said, y'all want to go to Magic City? And we said, all right. And so we jumped in my homeboy's Nissan Quest minivan, about six deep, and we rolled to Magic City. And we got to Magic City, and we got in, and we sat down. But the problem was, nobody really had any money. And that's where we learned an important lesson about strip club etiquette, which is, you ain't just about to be in here sitting down, not spending no money. Spend money or make room. I was the only person that had access to any money. So I had to be the money spender. I remember my homeboy, he had a bottle of Budweiser and he drank it. And even after he was finished drinking it, he just kept on drinking it. Just kept turning it up just to give that impression that he still had something there. And so I went there, had a very good time. It was a lovely, shall we say, eye-opening experience. This is prior to all the renovations that make the place now. I will fast forward you to May of 2002. I've driven home from graduate school, me and my homeboy, made the drive from California, drove to Atlanta. And my boy said, hey, cuz, let's go to Magic City. He'd heard about Magic City. So he walked in and he said, oh, cuz, it's a party in here. Except there was a word in between A and party. There was a little alliteration going on. You understand what I'm saying? Because he walked in and yeah, that was what was going on. It was after the renovations and it was pretty incredible. And I went in there and I spent the last $35 I had to my name at Magic City that day. It's a memorable experience. I'll never forget it. I say all that to say, I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to talk to you about what's going on here with the homie Lou Williams. Now, Lou Williams got into a thing because he went to Magic City to pick up some wings, and some dude named Jack Harlow. Gabe, had you ever heard of Jack Harlow before this?
No.
I had never heard of him either. And I just read about the story, and then I pulled up a picture of Jack Harlow, and I was like, I thought y'all said he was a rapper. But he is. He's a Caucasian gentleman who raps, and apparently he saw Lou Will at Magic City when Lou went to pick up his wings. Lou should have some beef with this Harlow cat. Took the picture and just couldn't help himself. Gotta put everything on the gram. Y'all can't do a damn thing without putting it on Instagram. This is what I've come to raise the question about with people and all the stuff they need to put on the gram. Do y'all think people care about this mundane shit that y'all are out here doing? Like, do you think that people care every time you get a meal? Like, do you realize how narcissistic you have to be to think that everybody wants to know everything you're doing? Now, to be fair to the Harlow dude, he at least is a little bit famous, and y'all do kind of want to know that, right? But I be looking on Instagram stories, and your little thing be looking like they dotted line to, like, tear the bottom of the paper off in so many little damn dashes on that thing. I'm like, you really think anybody cares this much about what you're doing? Because I don't think that people care that much about what I'm doing. Y'all really think people care that much about what it is that y'all doing? Anyway, but it's just an addiction, man. People just believe that everything they do has to be put on the gram. And so Jack Harlow saw Lou Will, and he just had to put it on the gram, and then Lou Will was in trouble. But I contend, as much as that did get Lou Will in trouble, he went back, they had to quarantine for 10 days, all of that stuff. Jack Harlow putting that on the gram is why I feel like I'm in a position right now to defend Lou Williams and say that y'all are being unfair to him. And there's a couple reasons y'all are being unfair. First of all, did you notice in the picture that he took with Jack Harlow that he had a mask on? Did you notice also that Jack Harlow had a mask on? I don't know what's cracking in Magic City right now. I don't know how it's going, but I feel confident saying that Magic City is making people put masks on. And you know why I feel confident saying Magic City is making people put masks on? Because you ain't about to get them girls sick. That's why. That's why. Let me tell you something I can't tell you from my time in that city and in that place. That is not a place where they letting you get untoward with the workforce. That's not going to work out well for you at all. You imagine how that goes? Imagine getting the news for a COVID outbreak. You imagine that? No, no, no. So them dudes had masks on, number one. Number two, Lou said that he left the viewing because he was there for a funeral and there was a viewing of the body. And he left the viewing, he said, at 6 o'clock, right? That the viewing ended at 6. And then at some point around there, he wound up stopping at Magic to pick up his wings and then to roll out. So that means, let's say he's probably getting to Magic like 7, 8 o'clock, somewhere in that range. It ain't popping in there at that time. If you go look at that picture that he took with Harlow, you notice it wasn't a whole lot going on in the background, right? It wasn't popping at that time. I bet it wasn't that many people in the spot when he went to get his wings. And I also guess it wasn't that many in the spot when he went to get his wings, because you ain't getting no wings fast out of there if it's popping. You ain't getting your wings fast out of there when it's not popping. I can tell you that from firsthand experience. Everybody talking about, oh, the wings are so good. Yeah, that's a secondary point here, right? He likes the wings. They call the Lou Will lemon pepper wings. Like, they are his. They are his. That is his joint. I don't think that club was popping in there. I think that that was basically the equivalent of walking into Applebee's and picking up your food and leaving. I understand the argument that there is a particular danger to being in a strip club in the face of a pandemic. I would change that, though, and say that there's a particular danger to being, like, up on the strippers in the face of the pandemic. It don't sound like Lou was getting no dances. I ain't heard nothing about that, right? Here's how I know Lou wasn't getting no dances. Because he took his food out. If he was in there getting dances, he'd have been eating his food there, right? It's just a strip club. And the idea of him going to the strip club understandably makes people raise more questions. But Gabe, I don't know if you saw it, man. I did First Take yesterday with the homie Perk. Perk was hot. Perk was so hot. Perk was like Zion Williamson. He's a rookie. And he handled himself better when he was out than Lou Will did. Number one, I don't know where Zion was when all this happened, but I'm assuming he was in South Carolina. Magic City is not in South Carolina. That's number one. Number two, he shouldn't be able to get into Magic City. How about that? Age. They got laws. Okay? He can't get into Magic City. Like, there's no, people were so hot, but it's only because it is a strip club. And this is what I want to educate some people about. I tried to do this on TV. I don't even know if educate. This is just something that I don't think that you can really understand unless you spend a lot of time in Atlanta. That, like, flashing strip club, strip club, strip club that jumps out of the story, Atlanta does not work like that. Like, have you ever read anything, Gabe, about the role they play in the city? Why it's popping like that? Basically, it was either the 60s or the 70s, I'm not sure which, but they decided that in order to make the city a draw for conventions, for business travelers, that one way that they would attract, especially at that time where business travelers were men, a way for them to get a lot of convention business was to have a thriving strip club scene. And so with Georgia, Atlanta in particular, I don't know about the whole state of Georgia, because, I mean, going to a strip club in Georgia, that's not Atlanta. Ugh, that sounds, I don't know about that. But anyway, they had more liberal laws about nudity and the likes in and around Atlanta. Again, because they wanted to attract men and they wanted to attract business. What's happened subsequently is strip clubs have just become such a normal part of Atlanta and Magic City in a way that's different than any other spot that I can think of, where this is just like a normalized activity. Like, I would read stories about, and understandable on this to be clear, but you read stories about sexual harassment, especially around sports, and very often one of the things that women would say that made them uncomfortable was, he invited me to go to a strip club. And after I did 4 years of college in Atlanta and being around there for a while, I would read those details in those stories, and my response would be, so you're not supposed to do that? Not that I was out here just like rampantly inviting women to strip clubs, but the idea of women going to strip clubs is not some like bananas thought in Atlanta. Like, just seeing three or four women walk into strip club. By the way, and I want to be clear, like three or four straight women walking into the strip club just to hang out, just to have wings, whatever it is. Atlanta moves to a different beat on this stuff than other places do. So I saw Lou had done an interview once with Roz Gold on Woody, and he was talking about how it's the culture down here. No, it really is. Like, so to you, the idea of I'm going to pick up some wings from the strip club on my way home sounds far more disingenuous than it sounds to me, right? Like, yeah, somebody could be lying about that sort of thing, but it's not really an implausible statement in that city that this could happen, especially at that place, because people love those wings in there. Love them, love them, love them. They all right. But people love those Magic City wings. This is the greatest promotion Magic City ever got for the food, easily. And not only is it the greatest promotion Magic City ever got for the food, that's got to be great for their profit margins, right? They ain't got to split that with the girls. They don't. And so now Lou is back. Lou out here got to defend himself at every turn with all these people who got so much to say. Like, Lou bucked some shots off at Perk about this. I understand why people with no Atlanta quotient look at this as the most ridiculous thing in the world. I just look at it as being hilarious. You went to Magic City and now you got a quarantine for 10 days. There's an argument to be made here that Lou cheated himself. And this is my last thing on Lou Will. Like I said, I'm on Instagram, right? I'm seeing these Instagram stories. You know what I'm learning from that? Whole bunch of y'all ain't got no room to judge. Y'all be on Instagram telling on yourselves all the time. I'm like, why are you in this house with 10 people toasting? And ain't damn one of y'all got masked the first on. Why are you doing this? At least I saw a mask. Once I see a mask, I'm like, all right, I ain't really tripping, right? Because I got too much anger for the rest of y'all that are out here without no mask on. Nah, man, people want to try to be judgmental on Lou and everything else. All right, I understand you. That's where you want to come from. It becomes a real easy one. The homie Perk was out here talking about, and now people ain't talking about social justice. Perk. You really think that Lou Williams is stopping the revolution? Lou Williams went and got some wings, and the revolution shut down right then and there? Is that what it is? Right? Because it sounds like maybe the way we get this revolution cracking is we need to get some of the ladies from Magic City to take wings out to the protesters. Like, come on, man. No. People heard strip club. Some of us thought it was funny. Others thought it was time to get mad. Me, I just think it's time for Lou Will to go back home and quarantine for 10 days. It seems reasonable. And then he'll be back and he'll be ready to play. I got a lot of questions about what the strip club is looking like in the face of COVID, but not so many questions that I actually want to show up. No thanks. But the kitchen right by the door, so you can just walk in, get your stuff, and leave. Just putting you guys on game. All right, Gabe. Our man Brian Windhorst wrote an interesting story here. You know, me and my man Vinny Goodwill last week were talking about how what's this going to be for the owners, you know, with this money, and talk about cracking open a collective bargaining agreement and all of this stuff, right? Listen to this story from Brian, and it ran Monday. as they face the reality of a sea of red ink playing in empty or near empty arenas for the 2021 season, some NBA owners are quietly preparing to find cash to weather the storm. Golden State Warriors owner Joe Lacob has informed fellow owners of a deal he's considering with Goldman Sachs to raise up to $250 million to manage coming expenses, sources told ESPN. Other owners are investigating opportunities to raise capital as well, ownership sources said, with some pursuing legal action against insurance companies that have denied coronavirus claims. Gabe, these dudes are broke. At least short run broke, which seems kind of wild because they're billionaires. You would think that they would be able to weather the storm. But can you imagine, like for Joe Lacob, has anybody had a worse 12 months and change than Joe Lacob? Think about this, okay? They're trying to wrap up this dynasty. You know, keep this dynasty thing going. Kevin Durant tears his Achilles. Klay Thompson blows out his knee. The Warriors lose to the Raptors. Durant leaves, and they wanted him to stay. They re-sign Klay Thompson to all that money, even though he's got the ACL tear. They come out, and they're in this new arena that they spent all this money to build, right? With the place for you to dock your boat and everything else. The last piece of good real estate in San Francisco was the way that it had been described. Build this billion-dollar arena. They got all this plan, sell these tickets, all this money, everything else. This is going to be the place. Boom. Steph Curry comes out here and gets hurt. The team is terrible. Nobody wants to watch them. This is not the place to be seen that Joe Lacob wanted it to be. He wanted to stunt for all the guys at Stanford Business School who never said he was going to be anything. So he's got this fancy arena. His dynasty is over. His players are hurt. Nobody's going in there. And now he needs to raise $250 million to get there. Because listen to this. Apparently, and this is the wildest thing I didn't realize. Winhurst mentioned this. He said the Warriors derive 80% of their revenue from the Chase Center. They can make $5 million a home game. That's way more than everybody else. Now, props to Lego because he has not laid off employees. But that's where they are. So many of these owners are hurting, Jack, hurting. Let's find some more of these. So Joe Tsai, the super rich dude that owns the Nets, Chinese gentleman, Alibaba is his thing. He sold 25% of his Alibaba stock. That's $3.3 billion worth. Dan Gilbert went public with Quicken Loans. You know, apparently he had said for the longest that he was not going to go public with Quicken Loans. Now, he's about to be super duper rich after doing that, but he had to go public. Let me find some of these other dudes, that people that are struggling. The Lakers are in a trickier situation because they're a mom and pop situation, right? So their money's kind of hurt, but at least they've got that TV deal that's still going to bring in money. Now, let's talk about Fertitta. Gabe, remember we talked about Timber Fertitta, the owner of the Rockets, how he took out a $300 million loan at 10% interest in April? Because, look, this is what he owns. Restaurants, hotels, casinos, and a basketball team. All his money.
Shouldn't he kind of diversified his portfolio?
Yeah, fair point. Fair point. He just hadn't planned on this pandemic, right? Fertitta tried to put in a $400 million claim of business interruption. And the insurance company not hearing it. Also learned from this Winhurst story. Owners are allowed to borrow $325 million against the equity on their teams, but no more because they don't want them to get over leveraged because they know if they allow them to do it, they'll just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Gabe, Joe Lacob has already borrowed that $325.
That's really interesting. I didn't even know that. It's kind of like refinancing the mortgage on your house. Get more cash now so you can extend out your years. You're basically refinancing your NBA team.
Yep. The dude that owns the Pacers, his name is Herb Simon. I think he used to be a senator. I could be wrong, but I think he was a senator. But he owns malls. Like, have you ever seen a mall with the Simon Properties Group? That's him. Ask me how much stock value his company has lost since January.
$3 billion.
25.
$25 billion?
$25 billion in stock value. That's how much his company is hurting. That's not all him, but it's the company, right? Mickey Arison, owner of the Heat, who also was like Carnival Cruises. That was his thing.
Oh, man.
He has lost $2.5 billion in net worth.
I would have thought that he would have lost more money than the mall guy, but I guess they were putting on people on cruises. That's kind of how this whole thing got started, didn't they?
Yeah, he also sold a bunch of stock about 5 years ago. So there's also that. Now, listen to what's going on with the Thunder, right? So their energy is their game, okay? Energy is their game. And so it says here, after Bennett, the largest stakeholders are the estate of Aubrey McClendon, that dude that's died in that mysterious one car accident. His estate's been trying to sell his shares for over a year. But they've also got a banking guy who's lost $2 billion in net worth since last year. Chesapeake Energy, who's got their name on the arena there, they filed for bankruptcy in June. And by the way, these are teams that have got free agents that they need to figure out how to keep. Next year in the NBA, in terms of money, is going to be bananas, because it's going to be what's going to happen to the cap and what kind of cash flow are these teams actually going to have to be able to ensure that they can pay the players. And look, that's just a small handful of dudes that we talked about right there. There are some others that we could probably point to at different points. Like, they going to have to figure out how to do this all, because they got a plan right now in the NBA for this bubble. But the question is, what are they going to do next year? Can you ask the players to bubble for 6 months? Tough to do. They want to try to get back into home arenas and do all this stuff. Did you see the news about Google and working from home?
Yep. A year, right? They're extending it a year.
Next summer. The question you need to ask yourself is, what has somebody told Google to make them say this? What is informing that decision? Because I feel like whatever is informing that decision, ain't going to be nobody in those stadiums for NBA games next year.
Next spring is when people are saying that this vaccine is going to come out.
Right.
So then they're saying, well, after the vaccine, months after a supposed vaccine, is when we're going to even entertain the idea of bringing everybody back.
What are these rich dudes going to do, though? Like, that's the thing that has to concern everybody in this, because these cats got billions, but they don't look at, like, I talked to my man Koppelman about this a lot. He makes the show Billions. And he's like, you got to understand, man, these dudes are not like us. Like, me and my man Rodholm talk about this a lot, where, like, when I look at these things with these tech companies, where somebody puts together a tech company and somebody offers them like $1 billion and they say no, I'm like, what, are you kidding me? You offer me $50 million for my company and I'm taking it. How much money do I possibly need, right? Like, how much money could I possibly spend? It's not possible, right? That ain't how these cats think. And so what are they going to do to try to keep all these billions that they have? How far are they going to go? How far are they going to cut this to the bone in order to make this happen? That's what I take from reading that story. They're talking about, man, how are they going to keep all their free agents? My goodness, I'm so afraid about everybody else. And what's, like, not just in this world, but in all these other worlds. What are these zillionaires going to do to keep their zillions? And what are the people going to do when they realize just how far on the wrong end of this they are? Because these cats just want to keep zillions.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from Science.
Hey, it's Andrew Daniels from Popular Mechanics. And over the weekend, we reported on a story that confirms what we've increasingly grown to know, that the government is actively investigating UFOs. Cue the X-Files theme song. If you're a believer in UFOs, or as the government likes to call them, unidentified aerial vehicles, it's been a pretty huge past few years for the cause. Back in April, the Navy officially published 3 leaked videos that show UAVs are real, a couple years after those clips were first leaked online by the guy from Blink-182, but that's another story. The videos were taken by Navy pilots and indeed show unexplained aerial phenomena, but the Navy said we should have never seen those videos in the first place. For years, the government hasn't been able to get its story straight about its official involvement with UFO research. In February, the Pentagon told us the government program used to investigate UAVs, but funding stopped in 2012. We spoke to people involved in that secret program that directly contradict those claims, and now a big new story confirms our reporting. According to the New York Times, the government's UFO program is still very much active, and the unit currently resides in the Office of Naval Intelligence, where it deals with classified matters. It's called the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, and it's meant to publicly divulge some of its findings on UAV sightings and strange materials to the Senate every 6 months. But here's the biggest plot twist. An astrophysicist who worked with the Pentagon's original UFO program says that after he examined certain materials that the government had in its possession, he concluded that we couldn't make them ourselves. And in March, he briefed the DoD about retrieving, quote, off-world vehicles not made on this Earth. Yeah, maybe this all sounds a little too tinfoil hattish to you, but when we reached out to the Pentagon, a spokesperson did confirm the existence of that task force, saying its mission will be to detect, analyze, catalog, consolidate, and exploit non-traditional aerospace vehicles that pose an operational threat to U.S. national security and avoid strategic surprise. So yes, the government does technically have UFOs in its possession, and we will learn more about just where they came from soon. And yes, somehow this is only the 37th weirdest story of 2020.
So here's the thing. We spend all this time telling people they're crazy if they believe in aliens, and it turned out the government does. Do you think they've been up there in their labs cooking up something to like they got a vaccine?
Oh my God. I want to see what they're working with. I want to see if we got some sort of like
yes.
flying vehicles. Are they holding out on us?
Well, one thing also too, we always think about like UFOs in the context of like functionality, right? They got rims. They be stunting. You know what I'm saying? You think they got knocking to Trump?
You look at science fiction movies and science fiction shows as some sort of like semblance of the future, right? That's where they get a lot of their ideas, that sort of thing. Like if you look at a movie from like 50 years ago, 60 years ago, sometimes we'll be doing some of the stuff that they thought of back then now. Sometimes not. Sometimes we're way behind, right? Like I don't know if you've seen the movie Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it supposed to be like 20,000 and, you know, like yeah. 2010 or something like that? So they like way, way went ahead of it. And they're like, oh, yeah, they'll have flying cars. We don't have flying cars. We're pretty far away from it. Are there flying cars that we just don't know about because the government's holding out on us, trying to make a quick buck, selling those ideas to Tesla?
Hey, let me tell you what they be selling to Tesla, though. I feel like they be telling Elon Musk anything. Like they say, like Elon Musk got a bunch of the worst ideas ever. Like he's got to be the biggest mark in the world for people selling ideas.
All right, this next story comes from business.
Hi there, I'm Hannah Dunham, a business reporter for The Washington Post. I wrote a story on how makeup for men is finding a niche, with a new cosmetics brand capitalizing on changing gender norms and the desire to look Zoom ready. When Devere Kahan woke up on the morning of his wedding, he looked in the mirror and found 3 pimples on his face. He felt self-conscious, but it was too intimidating to ask a makeup artist to help him cover them up. The experience got him wondering about a sort of shadow market for men who want to cover up razor burn, acne, under eye circles, or rosacea, but don't know what to use or where to buy it. So in 2017, Kahan founded Strix, a cosmetics brand for men, the first of its kind to earn a national rollout with a retailer like CVS, which launched this July. Men have a long history with makeup, dating back to ancient Egyptians, but they represent only a sliver of the $7.6 billion Americans spent on cosmetics last year. But the global market is expanding, and during the pandemic, we've seen sort of the Zoom effect, with online searches and product sales going up for men looking for the basics. Strix pivoted during the pandemic and launched tutorials on applying their products and looking Zoom ready on YouTube, Instagram TV, and TikTok with an educational approach, especially when it's more common for men who don't already have a skincare routine to just use regular soap and body wash on their faces. If you're staring at yourself on Zoom for 30 hours a week, you're going to notice more of your blemishes, and with commute times gone thanks to teleworking, you have more time to develop a skincare routine and focus on personal grooming. For this story, I talked to 4 non-traditional makeup users, 3 men and 1 non-binary individual, who shared their experiences with finding shades that match their skin tones, the stigma attached to being a man and wearing foundation to work or on a date, navigating different brands and how they market gender, and how makeup for anyone can be a tool for confidence and self-expression.
I'ma just say to you fellas, start by washing your face right. You might not have to do this makeup thing if you just actually get you a skincare situation. And I do not understand how any man is too proud to get a skincare situation. Number one, it's just like washing. Like, you're too good for lotion. You understand what I'm saying? Like, get the right soap. Make it happen. Number two, they care about this a lot. They into this. But I'm not far enough in my journey in evolution to be talking about like wearing makeup if I'm not on television. That being said, I did not sleep well the other night. I had to wake up early on Monday to do some things. Did first take. I was looking pretty good. I looked at myself all highly questionable. Man, I had them circles under my eyes. I looked like a raccoon. It was not a good look at all. And my thought in that moment was, man, I missed the makeup lady. like that was, I did get to that point. But is this another level of our tools of technology making everybody think they on TV, right? Because that's what Zoom has got people doing. And now they think that they need to get makeup. Actually, Gabe, as I'm looking at the two of us in our Zoom-like platform that we are using, I got to say, I don't know if there is any other show at this network with 2 dudes with better skin than me and you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
No, I'm serious. Like, look at your skin. Look at it right there. Your skin goes strong.
Well, this isn't exactly HD.
Yeah, but even still, like, I've seen you. A friend of mine who met you thought you were very handsome.
Very nice of them to say.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that was the first remark.
I'm not shy on the face wash
yes.
and the face lotion. Yes. So to your point, let's get a start there and then see what you got going from there.
That's what I'm saying. That's what you got to do. Like, it ain't no shame. It's whatever. I do this. I do the wash. I do the tone. I do the exfoliate every other day and then moisturize, you know, with some sunscreen. And then on the weekends, I do a mask.
There you go.
Because why not?
Why not? It feels fantastic.
I was at work one day and I was talking with the producers of the show and we were talking about skincare stuff, right? And one of the guys was like, I think it was Travis Scott once asked Pharrell what his skincare regimen was. And everybody's ears perked up. All the dudes were like, yo, what does Pharrell do? You know, like everybody wanted to know. And then I went home that day and I sent the mask to one of the guys that was asking about it. I was like, yo, you ought to try the mask I use, right? That is something we do need to normalize as dudes is proper skincare. Because if you out here looking like a star crunch, we gonna clown you for it.
And then you end up like going to go ask your girlfriend, ask your wife, ask your like mother-in-law, someone for their like cover up. But you know what? If your situation was right in the first place, you wouldn't even have to ask.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's. And I also have to say this. If you're this far in your life, like I'm almost 40 years old and you have not developed some sort of skincare regimen, I can only assume you got to stop dating these mediocre women, man.
And it's never too late to start, right?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Look, ain't no good woman allowing you to come out here with this messed up skin. It's not happening. Like, if she is looking at you and just being like, fine, be out here with them bumps on your face, she, you could do better.
All right, so this last story is a Metro story. And there's not a ton here, so I figured I would just do it myself. It's hilarious. So up in Maine, there were these two neighbors that were having a dispute over the property line. And over the property line, this man had his garage, and it was kind of straddling the line. The neighbor sawed through the man's garage to properly define that property line. Sawed through the man's garage. The garage was sawed in half. This is insane. Have you heard of anything like this happening before? Are you familiar with like any sorts of like property line disputes?
Yeah, well, like property line disputes often involve like cutting some tree branches. You know what I mean? Because they're going over. Wasn't it a property line dispute that got Rand Paul's ass kicked by his neighbor? You remember that? But they gave old buddy 8 more months for that, by the way. Remember that when he broke Rand Paul's ribs?
I don't remember that story.
Oh, no. Look that up. Rand Paul had some dispute with his neighbor, and his neighbor broke his ribs.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to be careful with your neighbors, man.
Yeah, no. So property line disputes can be things. I ain't never heard of nobody sawing somebody's garage because of property line dispute. And maybe part of that is because I'm from Texas, which is to say, that seems like a great way to get shot.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. I'll put this article up in the show notes just so people can check it out for themselves. Yeah,
I'm just telling you right now, you get caught sawing somebody's garage like that and you get shot, ain't nobody going to jail for that.
People talk about like disputes that they even have with neighbors, like apartment to apartment.
Yeah.
But there's another level of game when it comes to house.
Yes. And also property lines can be in weird places. Like what seems like your property isn't necessarily what is logically your property. You know what I mean? Like, even if you don't own it, it's kind of yours.
And there's a whole lot of trust there also, too. Like,
yes.
Oh, yeah, it's really on my property, but it's all right. Like, I'm not going to draw like a hard line. Like, lots of times they'll put like a fence. People use like a hard fence and be like, yeah, that's the property line. But when I first came to Connecticut, a lot of houses don't have fences dividing the property lines.
Yes.
It's just kind of like rolling yard to yard. I'd never seen that before in my life. I was like, damn, they have a lot of trust in each other just to be able to let it flow like that.
Yeah, Atlanta's like that too. Atlanta's very much like that.
Yeah, a lot of trust.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So a listener called out to us, our guy that we were talking about earlier in the podcast, Jack Harlow, about the biggest lie that you've told to cover up for one of your friends. And so we got a couple of interesting ones. Our first one comes from Brian in Inglewood.
Worst lie I ever had somebody tell for me was my cousin. At the time, I had 2 girlfriends, and my primary girlfriend was the one who always used to wash my clothes. We didn't have like a washer and dryer inside the house, so she had an apartment that had a washer and dryer. She washed my clothes for me. So one day I was with my other girlfriend, and I had a lot of clothes, so she went ahead and washed them for me. And primary girlfriend came like the day later and just see all my clothes neatly washed and folded, so she automatically knew something was up. So I had my female cousin, literally, I had to text her to like cover for me to say she washed my clothes for me. And that was by far the worst lie I've had somebody say for me, that they washed my clothes.
Primary girlfriend, huh?
Primary and secondary. So there's a clear stratification here. He didn't just say like, oh, one girlfriend I had and another girlfriend. Primary and secondary.
You ever had a cousin who will wash your clothes for you? Because I have not.
I've never lived close enough to family like that to where I'd been able to call
them.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying is that was an obvious, horrible lie. Yeah, if I told somebody my cousin washed my clothes for them, the next question would be, so what kind of cousins is y'all?
Yeah, you're pretty close to your cousin. That's kind of
it's a little weird.
I guess maybe if you're like an only child, maybe some of your cousins are really close like that. But close enough to wash your clothes for you?
Nah, dog. I ain't got none of those.
All right, this next one comes from Steven in St. Louis.
I'll tell you this time that my best friend had it covered for me. So we were in high school. I think we had just graduated high school, and we were going to go out, you know, for the weekend. And I asked my pops, you know, is it cool, you know, if I spend the night at my boy's place? He goes, yeah, you know, you can still spend the night at his place, but you have to make sure that you go to church the next morning. So I lived under his rules. So we went out that night, that Saturday night, and partied way too hard and had to get up real early for church, and we wound up not getting home till about 3 a.m. And so we woke up the next morning, and it was about 11:30. We're like, damn, there's no way we're going to make church now. And I'm like, damn, my dad is going to be so mad. You know, my boy is like, you know, don't worry about it. I'll cover for you. I got you. So there's this donut shop that was around the corner from church. We go after every sermon, we would go over there. So I was like, let me go meet up with my dad, get my good shirt on, whatever. So we get there, and my pop's there with his family. And he goes, hey, how's it going? Yo, what's up? Everybody's saying what's up. And he goes, well, how was church today? And so me and my boy like, oh, you know, we really love the worship. We were singing praise, you know, even tithed a little bit. And he said, oh, so what'd you get out of the sermon? And so we had to think fast. And I see, we're like, you know, how we're supposed to, you know, love your family more and whatnot. And so then he looks at us and he's staring. He goes, so that's what y'all got out of it. And we're like, yeah, you know, we feel like better people now. And he goes, funny, because the sermon was about money. We knew we were done for. And he's like, all right, I'll see you later. And he told my best friend, I'll see you later. So he just waved him off to go. And my dad didn't trust me for about 10 years after that, and he still brings it up whenever we're at like family functions.
Yo, that's like a story my dad tells. My dad tells a story about the last whooping he ever got, because his dad is a preacher, and his thing was don't go to the movies on Sunday. That was a big thing for him, to not go to the movies on Sunday. And I think he said he was like 13, 14, somewhere in there. And they went to the movies on Sunday, and I think his dad had seen him or something like that. And he said his dad called a bit and sat down next to him and just talked to him very calmly and, you know, explained to him why it was that he didn't want his boys to go to church on Sunday. Daddy was like, oh, okay, cool, right? Think I'm good. And he looked at him and said, and once I'm finished, I'm pretty sure that you will understand me at last. And then the whooping commenced. Daddy would also talk about that he's from this little town in Louisiana, and that the hardwood mill was the industry, that's where his dad worked. And it was a pond, you know, a mill pond. And he said that they would go swim in the mill pond. But he said it would be so funny because you'd be so ashy when you came out the mill pond. Like, they thought they could go sneak and go swim in the pool in the mill pond and nobody would notice. But they come out and they'd just be all gray, and everybody knew that they had been swimming in the mill pond.
This guy thought he could go to the donut shop after and skip it because that's where everybody was going.
Incorrect.
All right, this last one comes from Jay in Tennessee.
So my homeboy, when we was in college, we was on a bunch of chicks, right? And we had went up to like Swanee, which is up on the mountain, and in a fraternity, you know, that was my line brother. And so these girls kept trying to, like, especially one girl was really trying to get with him and trying to holler at him and this, that, and the other. So he had jumped out the window and said, hey, yo, my LB, he's got a colostomy bag. And, you know, I can't really go anywhere because he can't really travel like that. So, you know, couple of days later, a few weeks later, she gives him a call, and then she wants to speak to me. And I'm like, hey, what's up? She's like, hey, how you doing? You doing all right? Is everything cool? Whatever. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's great. Yeah, just wondering when we can meet up with y'all again, hook up. You know, we had met him at a little step show, whatever. And then he's like, the whole time he's doing like this, no, 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 no. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And so I give him the phone back. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to call you back later. So then he tells me, yo, I told her that you got in an accident and you have a colostomy bag. That's why we can't come down there and see y'all. And I'm like, what? You really like you put me in an accident where I have to carry a bag that holds my own feces and urine? And he's like, yeah. So long story short, I had to keep the lie going. And I called, she called back and she's talking to him and she's like, I want to talk to your line brother, because she knew who I was. I was like, hey, how you doing? She's like, and so the second time around, I had to change it up. I was like, I'm good. You know, every day is a different situation. But, you know, I deal with it a day at a time. Bo, I've never let him live this story down. And ever since then, if I ever had a lie to tell, whether it be, and this was 20 years ago, whether it be to my wife or somebody else, he's always had to come through and cover for me. Because when you put your boy in a colostomy bag, there's not a whole lot else that you can say right there.
Yeah, you gonna be boo-boo bag on campus from here on out just because your whole boy had a lie to tell.
Now, that was like the truest interpretation of the lie to tell.
Yeah, horrible lie. No, we're not going to play like that. No, we're not going to. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Andrew Daniels of Popular Mechanics. Check out his story on a once clandestine UFO program at popularmechanics.com. Thanks to Hannah Denham of The Washington Post. Check out her story about how video calls got dudes putting on makeup at Washington Post. .com. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.